actually 46-39, and I think when you said 50, you meant 50 points difference, and you were actually wrong. So thank you, and good night.
A monstrous 40 tries scored across round 12, with 15 of them at Vallis Way on Saturday.
A record crowd in Bristol enjoying the West Country Derby on Sunday while lightning struck in the late game against the three-time winners Saracens.
Some massive games and some important results that we're going to look back on in a round that saw the top four race really starting to take shape. We'll look ahead to who plays next, including that blockbuster clash in Devon.
And of course, we'll talk about how you can learn the art of giving team talk through the phenomenon that is podcasting, because that is Philippa Tuttiot. I'm Nick Heath, and this is The Power Pod. Hello, everybody. Welcome, welcome, welcome. How are you? Philippa Tuttiot, how are you, first of all?
Oh my gosh, yeah, good. Still taking in all the reaction from Trailfinders.
Yes.
Kimbo, first, gotta love Kimbo.
That first voice you heard was indeed assistant coach at Ealing Trailfinders, Kim Oliver, double World Cup player with England's Red Roses. Yes, for anybody that hasn't seen the clip on our socials, well, Philippa, it turns out that, I mean, I was getting it in the neck. God knows what would have happened if you'd have actually been there. You may all remember that last week Philippa said, you know, if Trailfinders aren't careful, this could be a 50-pointer. And, well, Kate Zachary put that in the team WhatsApp group and everyone was walking up to me at Trailfinders. I decided basically to meet Elmer Smith and go, I haven't seen you in ages. Should we go for a little New Year watch at Trailfinders? That's a nice local West London game. So we popped along. And yeah, I basically had people giving me evils, staring me down, going, 50 points, is it? 50 points, right, well. I was like, it wasn't even me, gosh. It was Philippa who said it.
I know, sorry, Nick.
It's okay, I'm prepared to wear it. We're a team. They were all very proud that it had been the motivation they needed. So there you go, Philippa.
Well, hey, look, controversial comment leads to a try fest. Nick, we need to think about more things to say. Like, we got to throw these bombshells out there. But in fairness, like, I did actually mean, sound like I'm creeping now, I didn't mean they were going to 50-nil them. I just thought that Harlequins could put 50 points. I actually didn't, I don't think I really mentioned what Trail would score. And I thought they would score, but in fairness to them, I didn't actually see them scoring as high as they did. So credit Trailfinders, you brought a wicked game. It was really entertaining and what seemed like a freezing cold night as well. Credit for you for going down and watching. Because wasn't there debate about the pitch being frozen or playable or...
Yeah, and actually I learned a bit here because I always thought that if the referee said the game is playable, then you play the game. And if they said it wasn't, if it's not, it's not. But actually learned that the referee will say that it's playable and then the two captains will each decide if they agree and are happy to play the game. And if one captain decides that they're not, then they don't play the game. So Jade Conker was under a little bit of pressure, I think, because she was like, well, actually, it is beginning to freeze up on this pitch a little bit. And actually, with those, you know, fake 4G pitches, it can almost get a bit harder than a natural ground sometimes. And I'm told that that reinstalled new pitch at Vallis Way is wood chip. And so actually, rather than it being rubber crumb, some of the wood, this is really boring, but anyway, some of the wood actually absorbs moisture. So when it gets down to freezing, it has the effect more of going a little firmer. So there was a little concern over a few players thumping the ground when it was pretty much touching zero. But yeah, I mean, even after the game, you know, they'd won the game. I was walking down the corridor to go to the bathroom and Chloe Rowley walked past me and just went, oh yeah, 50 points.
Did you?
I was like, they're still unhappy, even though they've won the game, but come close. I mean, I am just going to say they conceded 46.
So, I know I was way off.
Yeah, clearly. Anyway, we love Trailfinders. We love the fact that so many people are listening.
Yes.
Welcome to the Power Pod. If you're new around here, we are winning friends and influencing people across the league. How's your week been anyway, Philippa? Other than that.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, really good, thank you. Settled in for the big game. Bristol, Gloucester, had friends around for that, and that was brilliant as well. Really enjoyed that. How was that for you, calling that game? What an occasion.
Yeah, really lucky to be able to have had that opportunity. And I had a chat with Katie Daly-McLean beforehand and said, look, we've probably got quite a few new eyeballs coming onto this one, so I think we might need to do our best version of subtly explaining a few more things in the game. Now, actually, you know, the bosses at TNT Sports are really keen for that to be how rugby is covered anyway, because we know rugby is not the simplest game. Even fans who've watched it for a long time need clarification over certain things. And I like to think me and Katie fulfilled that brief and certainly received a few messages from people who were watching. So, yeah, we know all the eyeballs were on it. You know, did the game quite deliver as to how we might have liked? Maybe not quite, but I'm sure we will get to that, because it is time then for us to look back at round 12.
Absolutely. So let's kick it off with that game. Trailfinders 39, Harlequins 46. So 15 tries scored in this one. Two teams that love a high ball in play. Quins came out flying 14-0 up in 9 minutes, courtesy of Sylvia Tirani and Claudia Pena, before Conkle, Kildon and Connie Powell all crossed over. Trailfinders tried to stay in it, keeping the door open at halftime when Kate Zachary scored their third to make it 17-31. But what a second half. Trailfinders powered their way back to lead the game with 10 minutes to go. Kate Zachary second, making it 39-36. Before Kerris Phillips and Kaylee Powell closed it out to ensure Quins stayed on top of the table.
Yeah, a treat to have been there for this one in terms of that contest. What a game. There were a couple of worrying moments. I mean, with that pitch being pretty solid in the temperatures, both teams lost players early to injury. Annabelle Mehta for Trailfinders going off after a couple of minutes after I'd given her the big build-up to Elma Smith on the sideline. And Alex Callender, I think, who took a bit of a head knock for Quins at 6 minutes. But plenty of top performers for both sides. I was continuing my love of what I see from Claudia Pena as well, so I couldn't resist. I grabbed a chance to speak with the young Spanish international after the match, and I just wanted to find out a little bit about how her rugby journey began.
I started at 8 years ago, and I play in Barcelona, in Barca. I started playing with the boys, and then I came back with the women, like 3 years ago. So that's like playing with the boys, I think, like gave me a lot of challenge to grow up as technically because I think that I didn't have like the strong and the physique that they have, so I had to improve like in other ways more technically. And then when I play with women, it's just a challenge every day, like just trying to improve and at the same time trying to get my teammates better, and also they get me better.
Oh, lovely just having the chance to speak to Claudia Pena. And I thought it was quite interesting, actually, because like many of the players that we've known through generations, Philippa, many women's players have either played with brothers. We've heard that story, but, you know, Nolly Waterman and plenty of others alongside her. And then those that, you know, like Claudia and others who say, well, I started having to play with the boys at a boys' club. And I just thought, the growth of the women's game will be hopefully taking us to a place where you're not going to have to just play with a boys' team to prove yourself and get there. But then there was a tiny bit of me that thought, gosh, I wonder whether some of these players really come through and excel because they had to compete with boys at a certain level and prove themselves. I'm not saying it's the way the world should be, but, you know, you see in someone like Claudia Pena, she says it was about trying to, you know, train alongside, but then actually now she's getting technically more proficient when she's training around other women. But I just thought it was an interesting point as to how that evolution of women's players will be changing when hopefully there are more peer group players, more fellow women taking and girls taking up the sport.
Yeah, I know, like specifically here in Wales, we had a big drive about 5 or 6 years ago and we developed these hubs. So girls from under eights could be playing in a girls rugby team. But I also remember speaking to some parents and some players that said, actually, I quite like playing with the boys. And, you know, they wanted to have the option. And I think that's good to have the option. If you just want to play with girls, great. If you want to play essentially mixed rugby for as long as you can, for as safely as you can, I think that's pretty good too. You know, Meg Jones, being down in Cardiff here, she used to play for Cardiff Quins, and they had a fantastic, still do, girls setup. So she was able to play girls rugby, but she would play mixed touch rugby. And that, I think, is an extra bonus, because it just changes the dynamic and the speed of play as well. You're receiving a pass that can 1 minute be a little bit softer, next minute it's a bit harder. You've got to make a pass to different lines of running because players, boys, girls run at different speeds. I just think that development, that awareness, it can only be a good thing.
Yeah, love that. So the Trailfinders game then. I mean, what a match. If you haven't seen the highlights, please find them. The option of the little boot downfield for Kate Zachary to dive over in the corner was just sumptuous. There were some lovely moments. Jade Conkle, 22 carries, 2 clean breaks, another super performance from her.
Yeah, absolutely. Jade Conkle, standout. There were actually 6 Harlequin players in that team of the week, the most, obviously, by any team. But also want to give a shout to Rory Wood. I believe this was her first start for Trailfinders or her second? She's literally just come in, the Canadian prop. 6 foot, hello, and prop in, and gave a lovely offload actually to a try. She's a good acquisition for Trailfinders.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, nice. Well, that was how things turned out at Valis Way. It was a really entertaining game, hat load of points, and the hot chocolate was decent as well. So that was good. Right, Leicester Tigers at 38, Sale Sharks 17 as we move to Mattioli Woods, Welford Road on Saturday's second game. Tigers back home looking for their first home win in the PWR while Sale searching for their first victory of the season, full stop. Meg Jones scored her first with her first involvement of the game. Emily Henrich scoring Tigers second with the Sharks' leaky defence remaining the case with Meg Jones making it a 17-minute hat-trick. Charlotte Frey scored Tigers fifth for a half-time of 31-0. The story really written at that point. But the second half did see Sale come to life. Sophie Hopkins, Katie Benson, Iona Antwis scoring to see Sale win the second half, 17-7. But the Meg Jones show had really done the damage first half.
Yeah, certainly did. Look, like you say, Sale came out that second half, didn't they? They made much more of a game of it, but it was a little bit too late. Although I do just want to give a little acknowledgement to, I know I keep talking about her, but she's awesome, Julia Makwela. You talk about that Meg Jones try. Okay, so I was watching this. She scores on what would have been the 8th phase, okay? But 7 phases leading up to it. Guess how many of those phases Julia was directly involved in out of the 7?
7?
No, impossible. Come on, Nick. Give me the build up. She was involved in 4. Now, when you bear
That's
in
impressive.
Mind, some of them were carries, so she's on the floor. She physically can't be in the next phase. But on one of them, she did actually get up and she made herself available. She was in direct for 4 of those, whether it was carrying, whether it was an offload, whether it was rucking, which led eventually to the Meg Jones try. So Meg Jones, of course, twinkle toes, unbelievable. But you've got to acknowledge these players in the backfield doing things that give her that front foot ball to do the magical things she's doing.
Yeah, I love that. Well, I'm saying 7 because Omakwela has just been absolutely brilliant all season. But yeah, Meg Jones, I mean, 70 metres carried, 13 tackles, 3 tries. Context, Lizzie Duffy, who played at 15 for Sale, had the second best metres and that was just 39. So yeah, great to see Leicester Tigers able to do it. Can they find that space and have that time against the other teams? That's going to be their big test, isn't it?
Okay, so the big one. Bristol Bears 17, Gloucester Hartbury 40, being played at Ashton Gate. Mm-hmm. A slightly stodgy first half saw Gloucester Hartbury take an early lead through an Emma Singh try before Bristol hit back through Millie David. 2 successive deliberate knock-ons by the Cherry and Whites in defence saw a fly half Clakey George sent to the sin bin before Elisa Joyce Butchers did what is normally the domain of her wife out on the wing with the most ridiculous but amazing dummy I think the lead has ever seen. But second half, the defending champion stepped up. Mo Hunt, of course it was going to be her. She helped to turn the momentum with a sniping score before Lund, Muir, Venner and Georgia Brooke finished things off.
Yes, didn't they? Really, really impressed by Gloucester Hartbury second half. I think, it was first half. I got word from Claire Thomas actually while she was waiting to speak to Dave Ward midway through the first half. He sort of turned to her and said, as she said to me, he was like, this has almost got the feel of a bit of a cup tie to it. It was nip and tuck and just the sort of game that wouldn't really find its flow. So, but yeah, certainly the defending champions able to do it second half. First up, the crowd, 9,240. Great record for a standalone PWR
Amazing.
Match, league match, I should say. Of course, we've had decent crowds at Queen's Home for finals and various things like that, and the sort of hybrid crowd that we had at Twickenham for Queen's. But yeah, over 9,000, certainly a record for Bristol. Yeah, it was interesting. Katie Daly McLean on commentary alongside me sort of was looking at me when we were having to decide the player of the match. She was like, Mo Hunt or Maud Muir or and we were sort of going through Kate Williams, and she was sort of pointing at them, and I was like, any of Zoe Allcroft? Like, they've all been pretty decent. And then she just pointed to Mo again and just went, kind of turned the game with that momentum snipe, and then actually the offload that got Maud Muir in as well. But when we went down pit side, the Gloucester Hartbury players were like, I think most of the team are thinking Georgia Brock should have got this, because she came straight on, won three turnovers, got a try as well. And again, influence of the commentator, the podcast. I mean, I made a comment that said, if you want turnovers, then that's what you want Georgia Brock for. If you want smiles, you want someone else. And I went down pitch side and saw Georgia and said, oh, by the way, I said, I'll get an apology in first, because I made a fun little remark. And she was like, no, you're fine. I've already heard it. My mum's over there. Someone's already told her. I was like... Good. So there we are.
But, well, there we go. But another comment leads to a performance. Here we go.
Yeah, quite. It was, as we should mention, the introduction of a particular debutant in the PWR. Ilona Maher was there. She might not have touched the ball. Fate was always going to have it that way, really, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But here is a chance to hear Ilona's thoughts on how things went when she was chatting post-match with TNT Sports. So Jenny Drummond and Katie Daly McLean.
I was really nervous going in, like putting my bib away and my jacket down. And then as I got in and made the first hit, I was like, oh, it's just rugby. Like, this is something that I do that I love. And I felt very comfortable to the point where I was like, looked at the time, like, give me 10 more. Give me 10 more minutes. I'm ready.
Well, talk us through kind of the build up, because it has, as soon as your name was announced, as soon as the signing was announced, it was a big build up. Put Christmas, New Year in the middle of it. That's not easy. And then also a bit jet lag.
Yeah.
So what's it been like the last kind of week or so?
It's been definitely a lot. I mean, I want to go out the field and do well for my teammates and be there because I'm deserving and I understand it. And it's, you know, a lot of system play. It's so different than sevens where it's like get ball, run. This is like there's so many steps in between to get that ball. But I've been doing my best in practices to trying to really absorb everything I can.
And how are the girls doing of kind of translating that kind of, you called it tongues when we were just chatting there,
yeah,
that
yeah.
like that rugby language, that's just, I suppose, very different, like you say, to sevens.
It's so different. I think I'm just kind of being a silent observer right now, just trying to like soak it all in, because there's so many things being thrown around and then like this word leads to this and that. But what's been so great is the team is so ready to help me with anything. Like even if somebody in my same position who I'm going to go and play for, like they're like, ask me any questions, I'm ready to help you. Holly, whether it's a forward, back, it's really an environment that's ready for me to learn.
It is amazing to think, you know, it's been a long time since she's played 15s, back in her college days. You know, the game has evolved. Yes, of course, she's a world-class sevens player. She's got the skills, she's got the physicality, the athleticism. But to join one of the best teams in the league, the best league in the world, like, pressure is on her, but fair play, you know, she is just open to learning, you know, to make herself, to have someone who's so up there, 8 million followers, you know, doing strictly the American version, to come and then make yourself so vulnerable to just learning, you know, putting your hands up and going, just teach me, I will learn. Like, it's just credit to her, isn't it? It's a real testament of her character.
Yeah, I thought it was, you know, hilarious when the camera came down and we had a little look at her on the bench and she was sort of giving it the smiles and the thing.
Yeah.
And I thought, how do you balance the personality and reactions at that point to be able to know that that's why the camera's there, to not be arrogant about it, to also try and have a bit of fun with it and not have your teammates hate you. And she managed to achieve all of that.
And made people laugh and made people smile, you know?
And I just thought, you know, that was absolutely brilliant. And yeah, look, social media, I've seen some of the comments on stuff and said, well, she was rubbish, or, you know, what's the point,
yeah,
and all this kind of stuff. Just completely miserable people who haven't got a life, frankly. And some really horrendous comments around, you know, her body and various other things, which I'm not going to entertain, but are the reason she is the beacon of body positivity that she is, and that people will listen to what she's got to say. And look, it's great for the league. It's great for the eyeballs that we've had on it. And she will, like you say, she'll continue to improve. I think she might be a little lucky that no one was looking too closely on her first contact, because she came running in and there was the suggestion of the very, at least the very top of a bicep in quite an upright hit. So I've had a couple of people say she was lucky not to get a yellow on her first contact. So I'm sure she will learn to bend those knees and get a little lower given her tall frame. But look, it's lovely to have her in the league and all of the circus that will come with it, although it was the circus that was the undoing of Bristol on Sunday. They were good, weren't they?
Oh, they were really good. Yeah. I want to give a nod, though, to Fee Lewis at scrum half due to the, we mentioned in last week's pod, the injuries there. She's come in and it looked like she'd been there all season. Like, talk about just slotting in. I thought she did a really good performance, but I was a little bit frustrated second half when they were camped in their 22. And I know it's the Bristol way. They don't really like to kick, but it was carry, 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 carry. And you would just go in, you're going to get turned over in a second. You're going to get turned over in a second. And you got turned over. And it just thinking, like, Fee Lou has got a great box kick. You know, I know the
Ollie Aitchison can clear. Oh, I mean,
well, of course. Well, yeah, but I mean, like, I guess, you know, if Dave Ward wants, you know, high ball in play time and, it, you know, that whole, we don't want to kick the ball away, want to play positive rugby, that's cool, that's great. But, you know, a really good box kick is an attacking play because you're looking to get that ball back. And if you've got the right runners there, and let's be honest, when it comes to Bristol, you haven't even got to look for your wingers. Like, Sarah Byrne will give chase. Like, you know, you could just put it up. Everyone would go up and there's a really good chance you're going to get that ball back. But it just changes the scene, changes the picture. Because at times it felt almost like it was a Gloucester Hartbury turnover training drill. You know, where the coach would pen you in a 4 meter cone square and say, look, you're just going to keep carrying because I want you to work on your turnovers. You know, it was like, oh, I just felt they just could have just changed it up a little bit. Yeah.
Well, we felt we had to point out in commentary because, you know, if you've got new eyeballs on it and they're like, oh, okay, so they seem to be carrying it a lot in their 22. Maybe the rule is that you can't kick it from there because surely that's the most sensible thing to do. So we felt like we really had to keep emphasizing, you know, we don't really know why they don't kick it. It felt, I don't know, suicidal at times. They were just in that 22 and not really going in the lateral, losing meters. I just thought, just kick it, just get rid of it. So whether that will change, whether there's a, you know, there are other reasons they're sticking to that as their DNA, I'm not sure. But while having more possession is great, if it's just in your 22 and you're fighting to get out, I really don't see the value. But there we are. I'm not paid to be a head coach. What do I know? Word on Millie David as well. She made sure that she stays top of the log with getting another one on the board. So that was 12 tries for her. And it was Renika Bonner, of course, who made way for Ilona Maher to get on. But yeah, great crowd. Gloucester Hartbury continuing to show the sort of form that has seen them have a great December and kick on into the new year. All right, Loughborough Lightning 22, Saracens 17. Since stadium at Franklin's Gardens. Oh my goodness, what a results. Loughborough concluding 2024 with a 50-pointer against Sale, and how delighted were they with this result to start 2025. Chrissy Schofield was on top form, opening the scoring with a screamer off the shoulder in midfield, adding another later on, nearly an intercept as well. Saracens hitting back with a Zoe Harrison try, which was soon responded to by another Red Rose, Sadia Kabea, celebrating her 50th Loughborough Lightning appearance with a score at the back of a dominant maul. Sydney Gregson found her way to the corner after a well-worked team try for Sarries before Schofield's second, as Lightning reasserted their lead to 17-10 at the break, and Emily Scarrett, the welcome recipient of another Schofield surge on the Sarries line, and the Sarries fight back was too little too late, albeit they did bag the losing bonus. Wow.
Oh, wow indeed. What a game. Look, it was Loughborough's first ever win against Saracens. That is huge. And when you put it into the context of their season, let's be honest, after the first couple of rounds, we wouldn't have predicted that. But credit to them. They have hopefully this is the moment, isn't it, where they click and we see the best of them. And look, returning Rachel Malcolm was there. She's back from that injury, which was really good to see. And understandably, she was a little bit happy.
Yeah, very special. I think for so many reasons, like I've been a part of this team since day one, and we've never beaten Saracens. You know, they're a team to be reckoned with. They're always in the top four, top two, and I think you know, we've worked incredibly hard as a team, and it's just so special to see the fruits of that labour. And I think, you know, we absolutely deserved that win today. I thought the girls were outstanding, and the fight from minute one to minute 80, whatever it was incredible and very special for me as well. We, back in amongst it, I've really missed playing with the girls. It's been tough being on the sidelines, but it just, yeah, makes moments like that even more special.
That result was just skittling through the WhatsApp groups on Sunday evening. I know we shared it in our group. There were others that were sharing it. It was just like, oh my goodness, have you seen this? Huge. And, you know, Lightning go above Trailfinders into sixth in the table. First time they've been in that position since round four. And look, you know, the Sarries went for an early quick tap when they got a penalty. Rosie Gallaghan thundering in, put it off to Marley Packer, bowling over. But Packer was held up. They put the effort in. I just thought, hold on, this is that for so many teams that would have been a 5 or 7 pointer. Just thought it was early, a real sign of the defensive intent. And Scurfield's first try, I love seeing wingers coming off the wing looking for work. I don't think we see it as much in the women's game. I think probably one of the best exponents of it, you know, lovely to see her now back fit and playing, is Claudia McDonald. She always would just pop up places. Chris Ashton, ultimately one of the best in the world game, I think, in terms of the men's who used to do it. So I love seeing that. More of that, please. I actually would have loved Ilona Maher to have been doing that. She clearly won't be comfortable yet to perhaps do that. But yeah, come firing off. Come and closely support a carry around a ruck and thunder through. And I just thought Saracen's discipline a few times when they were under pressure, particularly second half when Loughborough were really going for the jugular, and discipline wise, they didn't have the worst concession of penalties over the game, like 21, like they did against Bristol, but they were conceding though in those key periods under pressure that allowed Loughborough to build the meters and then get into those gold zone scoring opportunities. Fair play Nathan Smith's side, they did it.
They certainly did. You talk about Chrissy Scurfield, also Aleph Kelter. She was everywhere. You know, I was watching her in a couple of her contact runs, and it's like, it's one thing to be running hard, fast, direct, picking that line. And for most people, that's their carry, right? They do that, they make contact, they go down. For Aleph Kelter, that's like only half the carry for her. When someone makes contact with her, she's like, right, now here we go. Like, arms are up and legs are going. Because it's like, because she's hockey, wasn't she? Ice hockey. I'm pretty sure she was under 20s, like American ice hockey player. It's as if, and you know, they're crazy, but they've got all their pads and their helmets and whatever, and they go and smash in. It's like she runs into contact like an ice hockey player would. She's just incredible and makes meters every time. And it's, no one can get over her because it's such a mess. Like, her arms are everywhere, legs are everywhere, and all of a sudden the ball comes back. And you remember at the very beginning of the season, we did that thing where we sort of did that like dream try scoring scenario where you've got Scarrett to Kelter, and then there's Scurfield and like all these names. I really felt like this was the first game where you could have said that, you know, like every player, these big names put up their hand and put in a performance. And it was really enjoyable to see. And, you know, I know a lot of people are like, well, did Sarries perform badly? And I actually don't think they did perform badly. I think they had some really good points, but I do think the pressure told in the second half. And I think it was a lot more down to Loughborough just playing with such intensity and looking so organized. And when you're organized, those quick rucks and then that ability to play something out the back, it just flows so much more, because it's almost like you're preempting, although you never take it for granted. And you know, you're always aware to make sure you've got players in the ruck and secure the ball, and you don't want to think too far ahead, but they seem to have that nice balance of awareness, intensity, but knowing what to do next. And this, I really hope this is that moment where we say, oh, from this moment on, Loughborough, like, they're up there now, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it was. I totally agree with you on Aleph Kelter as well. It's almost like she sort of runs in one line to take the contact, and then she's going to use that momentum to bounce in and go and fight someone else and take them on. She was actually top of the meters. She made 97 meters. I haven't got the detail on that as to how many of those were post contact meters, but I imagine it was 97 of them because of how effective she is on that. So look, it was a brilliant result. For Nathan Smith's side, and yeah, as you say, it'll be interesting to see how they kick on. I'm sure we'll discuss a little bit of the Loughborough Lightning effect on the league a little bit later on. So shall we get into our round 13 preview then and look ahead to next week?
Yes, let's do it.
All right, then. So we have another West Country clash awaiting us. It all begins on Saturday. Gloucester Hartbury welcoming Loughborough Lightning to the 4Ed Hartbury Stadium at 2 o'clock. Well, at the same time in North London, the Wolfpack in Saracens seeing a visit from Leicester Tigers to the Stonex. That one will be live on YouTube. On Sunday, Sale Sharks host-dealing Trailfinders kick off 2 o'clock. You can catch that via the Global Yo app. And an hour later on Sunday sees the weekend's biggest fixture, arguably Exeter Chiefs, looking to defend Fortress Sandy Park against a wounded Bristol Bears side in front of the TNT sports cameras. It's Harlequins who have the bye this weekend. So, Saturday, 2 o'clock then. Gloucester Hartbury, Loughborough Lightning, Phil.
Yeah, awesome. Okay, so Gloucester Hartbury timing their run really nicely. They've won 4 of the last 5, and that includes victories over some of the top dogs, Bristol, Exeter Chiefs and Saris. Loughborough Lightning have been showing these glimpses throughout the season. We've been waxing lyrical about the quality they possess. Their victory at home over Saracens that past weekend might just be the watershed moment for them. Gloucester Hartbury, no doubt, keen to keep chasing Quins, knowing full well that Bristol have a game in hand and Chiefs have 2.
Yeah, they do. Exeter Chiefs are played 9 compared to those teams that have played 11 at the minute. And look, we just spoke about Loughborough, and is it any surprise that their fortunes have started to improve since Sadia Kabea returned, started performing, Aleph Kelter joined the lineup, as we mentioned, Rachel Malcolm back in the fray, Chrissy Scurfield on top form. I mean, you can really understand how excited Nathan Smith was about his team at the start of the season, but also how frustrated he's been waiting to get a few of his shiniest cars on the road.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And it was the scoring in the variety of ways as well that I thought was really impressive by Loughborough Lightning, you know, changing that point of attack continuously and some really nice defensive reads, especially in that back line. You can see Scarrett and Kelter, you know, trust is there, the communication is there, because they're two players as well that move very differently, which when it comes to a defensive partnership as centres, you've really got to know one another and be able to react to one another. And I thought that's developing really nicely.
Yeah, it's going to be at the 4Ed Hartbury Stadium. So this is a pretty big game. It's not going to be in a you know, spanking big stadium. And I wonder whether Loughborough Lightning might just use that to their advantage without there being as big a machine behind the defending champions as to if they can turn up there and have a good go at Gloucester Hartbury. How do you see this one going?
I don't know. Gloucester Hartbury just looks so assured at the moment. Do you remember back at the beginning of the season, Sean Lynn, you know, when they dropped a couple of early games, and he was just so calm about it, wasn't he? And he was just like, yeah, it's happened. We'll see how the season goes. Like, has he got a crystal ball? Did he just know, look, guys, don't worry. Come December, January, we'll be on it. We'll smash it. Because it is literally that little phase is just gone. And now they're just back to Gloucester Hartbury, full confidence. They're playing like they did when they sort of had that surgence of developing their game plan and everyone stepping up when they were the underdogs and they were just performing and it was the circuits and it was fun. You can almost see that vibe coming back, which is incredibly impressive when they've been playing, you know, they've been at the top for so long.
Yeah, it didn't look like the three-peat was on when we were sort of sitting towards the end of November. Mm. But actually, that brilliant December that they've had, really discovering that form, I think that performance against Exeter really, really allowed Gloucester Hartbury to show what they're on. And Mo Hunt getting player of the match, thought she was great at the weekend. She's continuing to show the sort of form that they want from co-captains, her and Zoe Allcroft working really well. So that unfortunately, it won't be streamed. So you'll have to do your best to keep up with the result of that as it comes in. We will hope that we'll get some footage on that on the highlights as well. But that is the first game of the weekend. All right, the second one then is Saracens against Leicester Tigers.
Yeah, so Saris sitting in 4th against Leicester Tigers sitting in 8th. This is going to be played at the Stonex Stadium. Things have not gone according to plan for the Wolfpack. They're in 4th and they've lost 2 out of the last 5 games. Bristol, who are 5th, are 7 points behind them but have that game in hand. For Tigers, they need a big win to put some belief in their systems after their first home win, an 80-minute performance against what you could call a bit of a vulnerable-looking Saracens would be a huge shot in the arm for them.
Yeah. I'm just trying to picture Alex Osterby reacting to us calling them vulnerable-looking Saracens. It's not sure that's going to go down well, is it? But yeah, they've had a couple of results. They would certainly have been on, like to have been on the other side of. And perhaps you could argue that Bristol, a couple of Bristol's recent results are actually helping Saracens out, because you know they've fallen a bit away from that top four, and Saracens are now in fourth. I actually wanted to give a shout out to Sam, by the way, of the Women's Rugby Show, who was peddling a line last week that I quite like about that top four, just about the impact of teams like Loughborough Lightning, who, while they're not going to make it into that top four, what impact will they have on how that looks by the end of the season? Because, you know, Loughborough are going to play Gloucester, Exeter, Tigers, Bristol and Trailfinders. And you know, they've got Exeter at home, so that could be an interesting one for them to play. It's not one that's going to affect Saracens too much, but how those others end up, depending on the strength of performances by Loughborough, is quite an interesting way to look at how the business end of the season is going to turn out.
Yeah, certainly. And you know what? In regards to like calling them vulnerable, I would say they're wounded. They've got to be wounded. Like, your pride has got to be wounded. That's the first time you've ever lost to Loughborough Lightning. But there's that cliche, isn't it, about a wounded animal. You can either be vulnerable or you could be at your most lethal now. And we'll see a retaliation. And we've seen retaliations before. Remember, beginning of December, they lost to Gloucester Hartbury. Very next round, beat Bristol. And stats were all against them, yet they found a way to win. And you felt like that was a retaliation sort of win. So, look, I have no doubt they are going to be incredibly fueled, incredibly frustrated. We saw that frustration towards the end of the game against Loughborough. And it's how they use that now going into this. Tigers have got the best, I think, chance to go into this game with that confidence. They've got a bit of momentum behind them. I really enjoyed their offloading play that they were playing against Sale. Now, to counteract that argument, you know, Sale's defence wasn't as strong as obviously Sarri's is going to be. So those offloading opportunities were on for Tigers. Will they have that against Sarri's? I'm not sure. But if they can get some quick ruck ball, if they can get those offloads in, you know, Tigers look like they're enjoying their rugby right now. So I do see, you know, Sarri's winning this, but I can see Tigers putting some points on the board.
Yeah, if Tom Hudson can clone Meg Jones in the next week, in the next few days, then that would help as well, wouldn't it? Word on Mae Campbell, by the way, 11 tries, placing her second on the tally, but she has won 22 turnovers, top of the charts, the next best being teammate Gabby Senft, who's on 11. So that gives you a sense of how many turnovers Mae Campbell is winning. We certainly mentioned her name a lot in the first half of the season, not so much recently, but she is still doing the business. So yes, a word there for Mae Campbell. So yeah, that one is going to be live streamed if you want to catch Saracens against Leicester Tigers on Saturday, 2 o'clock. Okay, Sunday then, 2 o'clock, Sale Sharks, who are in ninth, against Trailfinders in seventh. That one at the Corpac Stadium at Haywood Road. Sale Sharks still in search of that elusive first win of the season. They've been finishing matches better. Those two late scores away from home in Leicester would have been a moral boost. They did at least win that second half. For Trailfinders, just 3 wins in 10, which doesn't really feel like a true reflection of their quality. And Barney Madison would certainly like his team to be better at finishing those games. And look, they did come back into that game against Quinns, just then letting it slip in the last 10 minutes, but certainly very, very close.
Yeah, and you know, we've got to bear in mind they had that long break, didn't they, over Christmas. So to come back against one of the informed teams and literally hit the ground running, absolute credit to Trailfinders. And I can totally understand their frustration, because Trailfinders are always in the game, and we talk about their attacking rugby. They scored 47 tries over the season. That's a lot of tries, 7 last round. But the difference between them and Harlequins is the points conceded, you know, and that's the difference between top and where they're sitting at the table. So I think a real goal for them against Sale, and as brutal as it is for Sale, I think is going to keep them to a nil. You know, I can't imagine there would be any targets, particularly on the amount of tries scored. It's obviously win the game, but let's keep a clean sheet. Let's keep them to nil, because that's got to be their sort of progression now.
Yeah, I was chatting actually at Trailfinders last week to Ollie in the bar afterwards, who looks after their defence, and he was sort of saying, "Look, I know you sort of said that our defence is the issue." I was like, "Okay, here we go, being held to account again." But he was like, "Actually, you know, we are working on it, but what you've said hasn't been too far wrong." So they know that they certainly need to tighten up what they're letting in the back. what they're letting in at the back whilst also going forward. So it's just, you know, proven to be a tough season for Sale Sharks, and you do sense that Trailfinders are the ones who'll be keen to try and hit a little bit of form away from home and continue their run of at least performing and scoring. So we'll see how that one goes. The second game then on Sunday is Exeter Chiefs against Bristol. This is the huge one in the West Country, third against fifth. And remember when Chiefs couldn't do anything wrong? Well, they're now in third. Joint points with Saracens. They want to chase down Quins, who are on their 9-game winning streak, of course. For Bears, they are stuck in that much despised fifth place. They need a win to close that gap. Promises to be a cracker. I mean, are we going to start talking yet about whether Bristol Bears have got enough in them to be able to get out of that fifth position? Because, you know, while Chiefs are level on those points, they've got those two games in hand. If they win both of those, they'll be top of the log. So Bristol, they're in fifth. They're 7 points off. There's work to do. Are the teams above them gonna cough up the points they need to be able to reel them in and get back into that top four?
Tricky. I think, again, Exeter Chiefs are wounded, aren't they? You know, that loss down in Sandy Park, for them now to be back at Sandy Park, they're going to have a massive point to prove because, you know, the last game that they lost, especially after being beaten so convincingly, it was at 41-12, Gloucester Harbury went down. And, you know, it wasn't just the scoreline, it was the manner of the game, you know, they were dominated. So, look, they're going to have a big point to prove. This is a really tough one to call, but I do think it's going to be going out to the Chiefs' way.
Yeah. I mean, Bristol had 58% possession, 42% territory. So, again, it kind of comes back to that point we were making in our review of last week's game against Gloucester Harbury. You know, are they playing in the right areas? And producer Caleb has written he only remembers one kick in their own 22, and that was a pretty poor one from number 8, Romarston Mulhern. So, you know, I mean, when they play well, it shows. Alicia Joyce Butchers, by the way, a word on that dummy, because I did say it on commentary, but I thought you would know exactly what I was on about, because actually I had this discussion with a couple of with my husband and a couple of touch players about how you execute the perfect dummy. And we did it in a coaching session with a touch team we're working with. And we're talking about, you know, how you can do it, the different, you can make it your own style. But we also said most of the dummies, or certainly for me personally, I'm not the sort of flashy player that thinks of a dummy in advance too often, but sometimes you get yourself to a position where you're thinking you need to give it, and you're like, well, will it be a longer? And you've sort of gestured for it long enough that the defense have completely bought the fact that you are buying it. And then you go, hold on a minute, they've gone. Oh, right. Yeah. Well, I may as well not give this and go. And all of that happens, you know, within a third of a second. But it's all going. And that for me is totally what happened with Alicia Joyce Butchers. I don't think she was like, I'm going to sell you and I'm going to go. She was like, well, I might. Hold on a minute. You've gone. And in she went. And I just thought, however it comes, you live off it for days. But yeah, it was a glorious moment. I really enjoyed that.
It was brilliant, wasn't it? Yeah, like she's either oversold it or, like you say, it was meant to be a ball back inside, because she turns every part of her body. And quite often when you teach a dummy, you say, turn your shoulders, look towards, but you keep your hips straight, because it's with your hips straight, then you can kick off and you can go to the opposite way of where you're showing the ball's going to go. But she completely turned. She was running sideways. She was doing lateral shuffles down the sideline. Her shoulders are gone, her hips are gone, her head's gone. And then all of a sudden, it was Pip Hendy, wasn't it? I'd completely turned inside, to the point where, bless her, she did a roly-poly.
It was hilarious. With all due respect to Pip Hendy, seeing someone get turned.
Who is class.
Yeah, absolutely. Brilliant player. Yeah. But seeing someone get turned that much inside out was comedy. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah,
good. And, you know, the question, will the lady of the hour be in the squad? Will she start Ilona Maher? You know, this is another tricky one for Dave Ward, isn't it? Because it's not a work experience job. Now, he has got a lot of players that are injured. We've covered that list. But, you know, if you've got Renika Bonner and Millie David, who arguably are going to know more about where they need to be and where they're going to finish. Now, Millie David went down injured. We don't know how serious that is. She had a few tears in her eyes as she left the pitch. We hope it's not serious. And you don't know with a young player whether just a bit of a knock and a bit of a scare has caused that, or whether the physios have said this isn't looking good. So we await. We certainly hope that Millie David is okay. That would obviously open the door for Ilona Mar. But yeah, it's how much you're giving this player the experience that they want coming to the league, versus actually I really need to put knowledgeable performers in those positions so that they can do the business. But yeah, that is going to be on the TNT cameras Sunday, 3 o'clock. Exeter Chiefs against Bristol Bears. Susie Appleby against Dave Ward. I think that will be tasty. All right, shall we look at the table then? Just to bring you up to speed, Quins managing to hold on to top spot despite the scare at Trailfinders, 45 points, played 11. Gloucester Hartbury also played 11, now on 43 in second. Exeter Chiefs, we mentioned, they have two games in hand now. So they're on 38 points, but they could be on 48 if they get 5 points from the two games they've yet to play. And Saracens then in fourth, also played 11. On 38 points as well. Then it's that 7-point gap to Bristol, who are on 31. Loughborough Lightning have moved into sixth on 23. Trailfinders 20, Tigers 11, and Sale Sharks still without a point. All right, we have put out the call for a few bits of reaction on the power line, and I'm delighted to say that we had quite a few people get in touch. So let us cross over to our first contributor.
Happy New Year, everyone. My highlight of round 12 is Tigers' bonus point win against Sharks, 38-17. First home win, nice. Surprisingly, stats are against Tigers with possession 44% and territory 37%. However, there are stats and there is a Mac Jones who has a flow. What a great performance. It was freezing cold, but it was definitely worth to come. Looking forward for next home game against Loughborough Lightning. Cheers.
So that was Mikolai. Thank you so much, Mikolai. I'd love to hear from you. There are stats and then there's Meg Jones. Absolutely love that. Okay, let's just move to our next one then. Thank you, Mikolai. We're going to get through these.
Hi, it's Henry from Ealing. I was at the Trailfinders v Quins game. I was really delighted at the score. My favourite bit was Kate Zachary's second try. Even though everyone thought that Quins would win, I knew that Ealing had enough skill to give Quins a run for their money. Anyway, I've heard that Loughborough are playing Ealing at 7:45 p.m, which seems late, especially for younger fans. Which brings me on to my question. What will it take for the women's game to get prioritised? Thank you.
Oh, Henry, great question. And I don't know whether it's, in this particular case, let's explain, this is around the finals round. So the final round, all teams are going to be playing on a Friday night at 7:45.
Yes.
I appreciate that is a bit late for little ones. And we want to make sure that the game is accessible for everyone. But I also think there needs to be a variety in the kickoff times and actually some daytimes and then some evenings where on a Friday night, you know, older generation are going to go out, have a few beers, make a night of it. You know, that's part of the game as well. In regards to prioritizing the women's game, the calendar is so busy for any sport, and especially with rugby, and it is finding a way to fit it all in. And we have to remember this is a Six Nations weekend. So I guess the argument would be, which would you prefer for the games to be on a Saturday afternoon and clash with a men's Six Nations game? Or would you prefer them to be on their own on a Friday evening? Maybe, you know, neither is 100% the right answer, but it's making the best of a tricky situation, maybe.
Well explained, Philippa. Yes, yeah, and worth mentioning, you know, for anybody who doesn't know, that round 18, the final round, all the games will kick off at the same time, as they tend to do for the final round of any league competition. But this year, it is going to be Friday night, Friday the 21st of Feb, all four games kicking off at the same time at 7:45. So enjoy a bit of Friday night lights in the PWR, because actually, we don't get to too much over the course of the regular season. Super. All right, we have just two more Powerline friends too. Hear from. Let's hear from Connie in Canada. This is a little quick one.
The best moment of round 12 was hearing that Loughborough beat Saracens. What a win.
There we go. Her favorite moment from the weekend. Loughborough Lightning beating Saracens. As simple as that.
Yeah.
That's all that needed to be said. Connie, thank you so much. Lovely to hear from you. And then we have a clip here from Rob. And Rob is never short of giving us a contribution here on the Power Line. So I'm going to play the first half of his clip at 1.5 times speed.
If you haven't seen it yet, get onto the Ealing Trailfinders Rugby Club YouTube channel and check out the live stream of Trailfinders v Harlequins, because that was an absolute joy to watch. Probably the most fun I've had watching a PWR game that didn't involve Chiefs, because, oh, what a spectacle. 15 tries. They didn't even show them all on the highlights package on the PWR YouTube. It was just a brilliant, brilliant game to watch. Queens ahead, obviously, at halftime. It looked like it was maybe edging in one direction, but Trailfinders clawed their way back, took the lead second half. Not known for their pack dominance, but they were solid in the scrum. They got their line out more working, you know, picked up points that way. Just fought all the way to the 80 minutes. Your last 10 minutes were so tense. Oh, what a game. What a game. Thank you, Trailfinders, for sorting out your live stream this season, because that was a genuine pleasure to watch.
Thank you, Rob. Yes, it is good when we can have more of these live streams to support. And you're absolutely right. What a game that was. We have discussed it, I think, at length and known the influence of the Power Pod. And look, lovely to have all of your influences too on the Power Line. Do keep in touch with us. 07880716219. It's on our Instagram as well, @thepowerpod_. So we can hear from you. Okay, one question time. Well, we missed it last week because we had a lot to pack into our bumper New Year episode, but we do now have the opportunity to hear from Bulu Matai Tonga, or Baz as she's known, I think, who can give us her response and perhaps a little education as to what having a Carver session is all about.
Hi, PowerPod. Baz here. Thanks to my friend Bimba for my one question. Her question was, what famous person do you want to have a Carver session with? I just want to speak about Kava first, spelled K-A-V-A. Kava is a traditional drink from Fiji and many other Pacific islands. In Fiji, we call it Yongona, Grog, or Kava. It's a non-alcoholic drink made from the root of the Kava plant, which is grounded up and strained with water. In Fijian culture, Kava is used at gatherings such as weddings, farewells, graduations, or just at the house. It's also a symbol of connection with your community and allows you to slow down from the busy pace of life and relax. With that being said, the famous person I'd like to have kava with is probably Beauden Barrett. He's one of my favorite rugby players to watch, and I feel like he would just enjoy the chill vibes. And for my one question, I'd like to ask Katana Howard at Seal Sharks, who is her favorite League of Legends champion? Minaka, thank you.
That was cool, wasn't it? A little bit of education as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Have you ever had kava?
I haven't, no. You?
Okay. Yeah. Went travelling after uni and had a couple of days on some of the Fijian islands and had it. It's a required taste, but a great experience to say I've joined in on a kava session. And it is proper. Everyone sit down around the fire. They make the kava in this big bowl, and then you get it served in half a coconut.
Yeah, okay.
Your kava. So wicked. And good follow-up question as well. Interested in that one?
Yeah, Katana Howard, we are coming for you. Mm-hmm. There we go. Right, any other business then before we move to your power play?
Oh, only 7 shows left. Only 7 more opportunities to cause some controversy.
Yeah. And for my alarm to go off at 6 a.m. on a Wednesday. Not that I'm counting down the episodes at all. But it's always better when I see your lovely smiling face.
Oh, that's so lovely.
All right. Let's finish off then, Philippa, with your power play for this week.
Right. Okay. So it won't be a surprise. We're going to Trailfinders. Okay. That high scoring game. And there was a moment in the game where you just had to sit back and applaud the effort, the determination of Kate Zachary.
Yes.
Second half, 70 minutes. Now, let's be honest, she's one of the more senior players in the team. And yet in this moment in time, in fact, not in this moment, throughout the game, she's one of the fittest and fastest players on the team. Like, it's incredible. The ball goes to ground. She is the first one to react straight up off the defensive line. She hacks it forward. She then continues to outpace all of the Harlequins players that are there to get to the ball again, to kick it forward again and score the try. And there, like I say, the work rate, the fitness, the awareness, the determination to get up off that line. But also imagine doing like a 70-minute run, finishing off with a sprint, getting off a treadmill, and then someone saying, right, I need you to kick this ball exactly 4 meters. Like, who can do that? You'd be hoofing it into the car park. Like, to have that skillful touch to know exactly how far to kick that ball, to keep it under control, to score, and it gave them the lead. Like, ah, oh, unbelievable, Kate Zachary. So I appreciate this probably sounds like I'm creeping. I'm not. Yeah. Go back, watch it. It's amazing. It's the power play.
Is this excellent stuff? I mean, is this just because you're worried we've fallen out with Kate Zachary because of what you said last week and she put us in the WhatsApp group?
I know, and I secretly want her to be my best friend, so I'm really sorry, Kate Zachary.
Yeah, excellent. Well, you know, that's what you get when you've got a back rower come centre, as Kate Zachary has been for club and country. But that is a super selection for the power play. I heartily endorse it. All right, we are out of time here. It's been lovely to look back on. Well, it felt like it's been a really busy episode, but thanks to all of our contributors as well. Philippa, what does the next week have for you?
Next week has for me, oh, it's my mum's birthday, big birthday as well. So we've got a whole weekend of sort of family shenanigans going on. So yeah, real family time. But what about you? You're back into rugby Europe?
Excellent. Happy birthday, Mummy Tuttiot. I am doing a bit of Premier Sports. So down to Exeter and then in Bath over this weekend. Also hoping that I can clock eyes on that Exeter game on Saturday as well at some point. Or maybe that'll be one to watch on the train on the way home. But yes, that is about it from us. Thank you so much, everybody. Thank you, Philippa. We'll see you next week. The Power Pod is a Level production produced by Caleb Matombwa. Cheerio.
Bye.